You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, everybody. This is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest for this episode, it is Deirdre Fenton, Executive Director, Unscripted, for Meadowlark Media. We get into a lot of things on this podcast, including Good Rivals, which is a three-part docu-series on the rivalry between the Mexican and American national men's soccer teams. Deirdre is the executive producer for that, how she defines her role at Meadowlark Media, and you'll soon see from the conversation about how she works on Unscripted projects and bringing them to fruition, including one she's working on now, a documentary on Diana Taurasi. And so it is, she's been in the business for a long time. Again, this would be a person who, you know, you're not going to have heard of her the way you've heard of a Joe Buck or Troy Aikman or someone like that. But it's a person who's done some really, really interesting things behind the scenes, including served as a producer for OJ Made in America and Hillsborough. So to me, Deirdre Fenton has been part of two of the three or four best things ESPN has ever done. That's including every single, in my opinion, every single piece of content they have ever produced. She was part of two of the top three or four, at least in my opinion. Anybody who's seen the OJ Made in America or Hillsborough documentaries, I would imagine probably agrees with me. So an interesting conversation coming up with Deirdre Fenton on the Sports Media Podcast. All right. As I said at the top, Deirdre Fenton is executive producer, Unscripted, at Meadowlark Media. She has many credits to her name, including as a producer of ESPN's Academy Award winning documentary, OJ Made in America, and the BAFTA winning Hillsborough. We'll talk about both of those in this podcast because I put those two as maybe two of the three best things I've ever seen ESPN air. They're definitely in the top five. OJ is certainly one. Hillsborough is in my top three. It's all subjective, of course, but I do want to get into that with her. She's here for a number of reasons, including to promote Good Rivals, which is a three-part docuseries on the rivalry between the Mexican and American national men's soccer team. She's an executive producer on that. That docuseries debuts on Amazon Prime Video on November 24th. She's also executive producing a documentary on the life and career of Diana Taurasi. Meadowlark has a part of that as well. And I'm pleased to be joined by Deirdre Fenton. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start off something sort of big picture. So the audience, I think, has a sense, Deirdre, of what you do. How would you define your role at Meadowlark Media?
Oh, we're diving right in. So my role here is I essentially oversee all Unscripted projects here. So all the, as we build out the documentary and Unscripted arm at Meadowlark, overseeing the development of the slate and then the execution of production through delivery and, you know, PR and all the stuff what we're doing right now, you and I.
So, you know, one of the things I think that I try to do on this podcast is, you know, there are people who might not know like how something comes to be. So like, how would a potential Unscripted piece of content, if we'll just sort of call it that, how would that arrive on your desk? Like, how do you go out and try to procure things that exist, or do people come to you with ideas? Like, how does that work?
Every single situation is different. I think my job would be a lot easier if there was only one way to do it. The truth is it depends. Some come to us through relationships that people have with our employees at Meadowlark. You know, you mentioned the Diana Taurasi film that we're working on. That came in through Kate Fagan, who is a full-time employee and journalist with Meadowlark. So she had that relationship and brought it here, and we were able to work with her and work with Diana and her team at Wasserman to develop that into a documentary befitting an icon like Dee. But other things come various ways. Some people are looking for someone to help, you know, finance some shooting, things like that, and you get involved that way. So it really runs the gamut.
I'm going to get more into sort of Meadowlark and how these kind of things get to you, but just so you can check the box off and have all the public relations people at Meadowlark happy here. good rivals is a good idea in concept. I haven't seen this documentary yet, by the way, just so the audience knows. But there's a lot. If you have any, I think even casual knowledge of the rivalry between the U.S. men's soccer team and the Mexican national soccer team, like, you know, just how fierce that's been. The stadiums, particularly in Mexico, obviously, are just really, really tough to play against. There's geopolitical factors that that come in, and I would imagine probably specifically during the Trump years. And so can you take my audience through, Deirdre, like, sort of how this came to be? Like, the idea is good, and I have no doubt that there probably have been some kind of doc or film-ish treatments on this, or maybe somebody did an episode for a sports like documentary kind of show. But so how does something like this sort of come together? How did it get to you, I should say?
So when this one specifically was really John Skipper's passion project. He's been an enormous fan of soccer, and specifically the U.S. men's team, for a very long time. So when I started, this was one of the very first things we talked about. So that it originated from him. And then from there, you know, we knew we were going to need both the U.S. soccer and Mexican Federation's participation. So we went out and got those first. Once you have the participation of all the relevant leagues, that makes your pitch a lot better. I think, you know, when you reference maybe this type of idea being around before, I think what makes it so incredibly relevant right now is, yes, all of the things in the recent political memory like Trump. But also, you know, there's this very new thing happening with players being able to play for both the Mexican or U.S. national team because they're because they have citizenship in Mexico. Their parents were born in Mexico, but they live in the U.S. And there's this very blended. Our cultures are becoming more blended, yet this rivalry remains incredibly fierce. And I think those kids have a very relevant story to tell. And it reflects kind of the world we're living in, which is very diverse and very multinational. And I think it became even more relevant right now. I know John Weinbeck from, you know, my time at ESPN. So when he got his new role at Skydance, funny enough, I think him and John Skipper are the two biggest U.S. men's national team fans in the world. So Weinbeck approached me and said, like, let's do it together. And that kind of that's exactly what we needed. And it kind of came all together perfectly. And we're really fortunate to have such a good partner in Skydance.
Skydance is a film company, basically, or film or a production company.
They're a production company based in L.A.
Okay, yeah, just it's for the audience's purposes. I'll let you you answer that one. So, as an executive, when people think of an executive producer, at least sort of when they think of like the Hollywood concept of that, like, I think they probably think of somebody who like oversees everything, like budget, creative. You're essentially the person who has to make sure, like, you know, the boat gets to the dock at the right time. Is that when it's on a project such as this, is that your role, is to sort of make sure that everything's moving, people have what they need? I'm sure at some certain point you probably sit in a in some kind of, you know, dark room with like four other people, and you look at like the, you know, the first draft of it or the dailies of it. So what is it in this kind of role, like what's an executive producer?
I mean, yes, that's, you know, it's getting, making sure the trains are running on time. But, you know, I've, as someone who's come up in production, I started as a PA. I view this as very much a team sport. Nothing is too small. And so like, I think part of what I want to do is make sure that we're all on the same team and we're all listening to each other. This is a big production. We had a crew in Mexico with two of our EPs down there. And so it was really just about like making sure we were communicating. And we did this on an incredibly condensed timeline. We were able to do 3 episodes in about 8 months. So that complicates things. And so I think for me, and also this is our first film, so it really was a great learning experience. And I'm really thankful to the team that we had, from the DPs down to the editors. Everyone really kind of just like went all in on it. And that's what we needed to get it done. And we're really proud of how it turned out.
So, you know, I imagine getting Alexi Lalas or Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, it's just event. It's not hard. They're in the United States. A couple of those people I just mentioned are talking heads. You eventually figure out, a hotel or their house. You set up. You can interview them. The next national team, to me, is the more interesting one. How was it any kind of challenge to go down there and to talk to the significant players or coaches or officials that you wanted to talk about the documentary? The reality is, like, there's even incentive, I think, for guys like Lalas to talk, right? I mean, if a lot of people watch this on Amazon stuff, it's good publicity, especially for a guy like him. He's going to be doing the World Cup for Fox. It's different though for the Mexican national team. I feel like they got to be like, all right, we respect like what this vision is from these people, and we want to tell our side, and so we'll agree. So how did that part work? Because that to me is, I think, the more interesting challenge, to get those. To get that side, to get those players.
For sure. And for us, that was the importance of working with a Mexican production company. They were, we work with a company called Oscillated Media, who's based in Mexico City. And it just speaks to the importance of diversity. You know, they're able to have conversations that like we're not able to have, both because there's a language barrier, but also because they've been there for 30 years. So when you're working with people who have been in sports productions down there, they have inroads that we don't have. And that's what was key. Yeah, you know, we did hit a few speed bumps, you know, a couple more than we did with the US team, but the US guys are just so used to doing this stuff and knowing exactly like eventually, you know, assuming what the product will look like. And so like that was kind of what we had to navigate a little bit more with some Mexican players, but really we leaned on our Mexican partners. And I think that was really the secret sauce on this one.
How would you, like in a sports context, having seen all these interviews, probably having seen a lot of interviews that we'll never see, they just, you know, they end up not making the final product. Like, how would you evaluate the rivalry? And is the intensity in 2022 the same as what at least me as a viewer felt watching it, you know, in like the mid-90s or late 90s, and maybe even, you know, whenever the U.S. got good, it feels like is when the rivalry got like really, really heated. So what's it like in 2022, at least when you listen to the people that you guys interviewed for this?
It's still there. It's like it's like a derby day over in the Premier League, which is your season can suck. You can be on a losing streak, but you beat this team and you have something to be happy about. That's the rivalry. We were at Azteca in March when the U.S. played down there. Place is packed and it goes straight up. That's like 100,000 people and it's like shaking. And that's the turnout that people have for this rivalry. It is, you're right. It really became heated, right? You know, right when the U.S. got good, but, you talk to the players about it, they still feel it. It's still the most important game on the calendar every year.
The you know you you're not in this, Deirdre, unless like you want people to see your work. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, like that's what this is supposed to be about. Like I want people to listen to this podcast, and you want people to watch this this three-part series. So, like, given the timing of this was obviously specific to the World Cup, you are actively rooting for the United States and the Mexican national team to do well, right? Because the more interest that generates from the current teams playing in the World Cup in Qatar, the more some casual fan who may be just starting to pay attention to the success of the U.S. team or the success of the Mexican team's like, oh, this is kind of cool. I didn't realize the soccer content existed. So this would, to me, there's like a real incentive. I mean, you'd be rooting for the U.S., I think, anyway, probably as a U.S., you know, as a citizen. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a real incentive you guys have for these two teams to do well, because the longer they stick in this tournament, I feel like the bigger the prospect is of people watching this doc.
Well, of course. But also, this is what happens when you work on something and, you know, beforehand, you weren't totally familiar with the players or the people. You work on it and you fall in love a little bit. And that's what happened. You know, we interview these players, like the U.S. team to me is so representative of what the U.S. is right now. It's young, it's diverse. These kids are online and they're making a name for themselves in a way we've never seen players like Lawless be able to do. And it's exciting. And it's hard not to root for them. They're good. And they're like, they have a confidence that they should have. And yeah, I hope they go really far. Not, my head says so everyone watches the film, but from your heart, because I like them and I'm really rooting for them.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, I want to switch to the Tarazi project. Where is this right now, just in terms of like the conception of completion development?
So we've been in development on that for, I guess, about a year. We've been shooting a little bit with her, and I can't say a ton because we don't have anything public about it yet. But I think, you know, she's always been a pretty private person. And I think people are really going to see a new side to her that is revealing. And I think we'll tell a larger story about the WNBA and women's sports. And it's exciting.
Okay. So this, without obviously, I realize you don't want to give stuff away, but this is like her personal and professional journey, maybe mixed in sort of writ large into how what kind of figure she is in sort of the WNBA landscape or the growth of the WNBA.
Yes.
I mean, that's like, I realize just doing that off the top of my head, but that's kind of like what it is.
That's correct. And also, you know, I think what I love so much about this is that women athletes so rarely have the occasion just to be like the best of all time. That's what she is. She's the GOAT. And I think that part of this will be cementing that, and the all of the winners and the shots she hit, like she deserved, you know, she deserves her highlight reel, and we want that to be part of this too.
Okay. So this is I brought that up sort of intentionally, because there's a sort of a very easy place I want to lead to off your Tarazi project.
All right.
Not too long ago, I wrote a piece on Kristen Lapis's amazing documentary Dream On about the 1996 U.S. women's basketball team. And one of the reasons that that, in my opinion, documentary worked, and it was phenomenal, it's probably the best sports documentary, in my opinion, I've seen in 2022, is she didn't, she told that story with, I don't even sort of know how to say it. I mean, she always was going to be honest. She didn't romanticize the story. Like, she told, like, the story warts and all, even in the moments where, like, it was uncomfortable for the players or uncomfortable for the coach of that team, Tara Vanderveer. You know what I mean? She didn't sugarcoat the doc. And she intentionally, I think one of the things she told me was, like, she would look at, like, a note every night before she would go to bed and, like, it was something to the effect of, like, don't be soft on this doc or something to that effect. And so, and I appreciated that. And that's why I thought the doc really, like, at least spoke to me. It pointed out the larger point, though, Deirdre, in that that market is so underserved in terms of sports stories. Like, you know this, given your position, like, so many of the greatest either teams or male athletes of all time have had some kind of treatment. I'm not saying all the docs are good, but somebody's most likely done it. There are literally hundreds of thousands of stories on women's sports or athletics that have never been touched. So I wonder, as someone in your position, someone who's got some power to make shit happen, you must see that as an underserved market.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been doing sports docs for a while, and everyone says they want women's sports, but what I find is women's sports with a happy ending. And the fact of the matter is, women's sports and men's sports are not the same thing. And so I think, like, what you're saying is just a permission to be honest with, even though if the story ends well in the broader context, like, we still have some fucking work to do. And, like, that's, I think, like, that's the raw, like, that's the truth. And when women like Diana and, you know, are aggressive and bold and, you know, and emotional on the court, it's not viewed as the same as when a male basketball player does it. So I think, like, what the craving is just to, like, say, like, athletes at the top of the game are at the top of their game. And, like, that's, like, and but beyond that, like, when we talk about Diana's story, she's had to do, like, she's had to battle through more than her male counterparts have. And I think that that's, like, whether or not, like, I, you know, whether how that has affected her and how's that made her feel is part of her story. And it should be. And it's not all like rose colored glasses. It's tough. And she deserves credit for trailblazing and for putting people where they are now. And that's kind of like that. Those are the stories, like, that I'm attracted to, because I think I think there is still work to do. And I think we're getting closer. But the women who have come before, like D, you know, deserve a tip of the hat for getting us this far.
Oh, first of all, I'm thanking you for posting this podcast.
I will think women's sports get me riled up, all right?
I like it. So, again, because I don't really get to talk to people in your specific position, like, do you feel like the economics are there in terms of, like, funding and stuff? Like, I don't think anybody who had the idea of, I'm gonna do a doc on the 1996 men's Olympic team basketball, right? You know, it's like someone's gonna fund that. Like, some filmmaker is gonna figure out a way to get funding on that. Do you feel like the economics like exist where if I have a great story about, again, I don't want to make this up, but, like, just for argument purposes, like, I want to, like, let's say that the 2000, like, 1999 is one of the great years in women's tennis, and I wanted to do some kind of doc on that. And obviously, it would have, you know, people, household people you would have heard of, like the Williams sisters or Steffi Graf or Monica Seles. Again, you know, forget that I said 1999, just whatever, you know, to pick your year where all those players were playing. Like, could I get funding for that? Like, is a women's sports story at a position where someone would do that, or is there still work to be done where, like, that's going to be still an uphill fight for me as a filmmaker versus where if I have an idea on some famous male athlete or team, likelihood is someone's fine.
I mean, I think, well, first of all, men had a 50-year head start in professional sports, and there's still how many more professional men's sports than there are women's. So like already there's a big disparity between the amount of people you're pulling from. Like football players have how many teams? A women's soccer squad is 25. So you're already dealing with a smaller group of people. And then I think like I've been very lucky from what I've seen. Yeah. I was at ESPN when we were doing 9 for 9, where we elevated women's sports. We've made a conscious effort here at Meadowlark to make sure our slate is diverse and inclusive of women's sports. But like, yeah, I think that people are a little bit more reluctant to take a bet on women's sports, but, I do think like if you get something, I mean, it's all about access, right? Like if you're able to land the Williams sisters, someone's going to buy it. Do I wish there was more than the Williams sisters? Yes. But I do think we're getting there, you know, so hopefully in 10 years, this conversation is different. But I think, you know, what I see in the men's sports world is like, you know, people are green lighting sometimes smaller docs, like 90 minutes or 1 hour on maybe like some athlete you've never heard of. I don't know if we have that comparison on the women's sports side, but certainly the biggest names. Yes. I think you are able to move the needle and get those things sold. I think it's just kind of the fullness of the offering. And I would like to, So I would like to see some more smaller women's sports stories get greenlit. And that's kind of still a challenge.
Yeah. And the fact is like a place like Meadowlark exists that sort of should help the ecosystem.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, a couple more here for you. What does Meadowlark want to be ultimately? I realize that, like, you know, maybe this question is better for someone like John Skipper, who's the head of this thing, or Dan Lebatard, who's the co-head of this thing and the most famous front face. But from your perspective, obviously, as a senior manager there, What does this company, what does this media company want to be?
I mean, I think what we found is we want to be an original development studio with ambitions broader than sports. We're starting in the sports world, but I think we see moving into politics and music eventually. I think we want to be a well-rounded production company with a diverse slate, which is pretty generic. I'm sorry, but that is the goal.
You, how long did you work at ESPN for?
About 12 and a half years.
Okay. Was there a path for you at ESPN to have this same kind of position? Could you have had this kind of senior management position where you're green lighting these kind of projects, or was that path either blocked or not possible? And that's why you ultimately sort of ended up where you are.
I think I don't want to skirt the issue. You can re-ask it if you like. I think at 30 for 30, we were all very fortunate to be able to have the freedom and the kind of creative liberties to do what we did there. And people stayed at 30 for 30 a lot longer than normal because of that. You had people like Connor and Libby and Aaron Lydon, and we were all there for the same amount of time. So I think normally like people move and it's a little bit more fluid, but because we all kind of got so lucky, it did become, it did get a little tough to figure out where the next move would be. Also, beyond that, ESPN just was changing. I think the media landscape was changing so quickly. I think it just kind of became the right time regardless.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to finish up with this. You were a producer on OJ Made in America, correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And Hillsborough as well, correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So those to me are just two incredibly phenomenal pieces of documentary filmmaking to be proud of. Obviously, OJ Made in America won an Oscar. And, you know, whether you think the Oscars are bullshit, and quite frankly, in many ways they are, no offense, Deirdre, it's still an incredible, it's an incredible achievement for a production from a sports company to have gotten that. I have written this, I wrote it in Sports Illustrated, I may have even written it in The Athletic in some sort of column looking back. That remains, in my opinion, the singular best thing ESPN's ever done. I do not believe they will do anything better in my lifetime. Nothing will be as ambitious, nothing will nothing will follow the parallel lines of sports and the American social system and politics the way that piece did. If you've never seen Hillsborough, go out and see it. It's one of the most brilliant documentaries I've ever seen. I think it's in the short list for the best soccer films of all time. So I'm totally hyping things you've been part of, Deirdre, but these are two of the best things I think ESPN has ever done. Regarding the OJ Made in America, Doc, what do you remember most about that experience? And when you were part of this, did you know that you were part of something extraordinary and groundbreaking as it was going on? Or was that only sort of acutely aware when, you know, people are rolling in with all these praise and all the, you know, people who write about this stuff are like, this is incredible?
No, I think at least on the ESPN side, we knew from when we saw the first rough cut that it was special. I think it took, you know, it might have taken Ezra a little bit longer to believe us, but what he did is nothing short of groundbreaking and completely transformative, you know, transformed the sports doc. So I think, you know, when we talk about, and with Hillsborough too, I'm incredibly fortunate to be part of both those, and thank you for those kind words. And I think, you know, what those two things taught me is like, sometimes it's not just an idea. It's more about the right people and the right people to go to bat for you. You know, OJ was supposed to be like 4 hours long. The first rough cut we saw was 8. Connor, like, he stood up after the rough cut and he's like, don't worry about it. I'll talk to John. And to Skipper's credit, he's like, yeah, 8 hours, that sounds fine. And so it takes kind of like all the right people making the right decisions to make these things come together. And the same thing with Hillsborough. That idea had been around for a long time. And when Dan Gordon, who's a good friend and I think brilliant, came in, he was the right person to do it, and it was the right time, and he put it together in the right way. That film doesn't get made with anyone else at any other time. And you know, when we were in production on that, we got a lot of feedback that, like, you're not the right people to be telling this story. You guys shouldn't do this. And I think, like, other people standing up for us and saying, like, let's just see how it goes, really, to me, it's like, I think it's easier to lead with fear. And I think seeing those people stand up for projects that ultimately ended up being incredible and incredible parts of ESPN history really, like, taught me that to try and do that. It's not easy, because it's really not easy, but hopefully that's something I took away from those.
Yeah, and just so to sort of like fill in a couple of things there that Deirdre said, Ezra is Ezra Edelman, who's the director of the incredible OJ documentary. When she says Connor, that's Connor Schell, the former head of ESPN Films, eventually became the head of content at ESPN, and now is at his own place, Words and Pictures. And she did reference Daniel Gordon, who directed Hillsborough. And just, again, I think most people who listen to this probably know this, but Hillsborough is the a documentary on what happened on April 15th, 1989, when 96 people died at Hillsborough Stadium, and sort of just how that honestly could have been prevented, and the tragedy through the eyes of those that there. It's really, that is an incredible film. Again, I think many of you who have listened to this probably have seen the OJ film, just given the mass scale of ESPN. But if you have not seen Hillsborough, go out and see it. I think people on this podcast know this. I'm not bullshitting you here. It'll be one of the best soccer documentaries of all time. If you love Maradona by Asaf, I think Capita was the director of that. It's in that same genre, like in terms of the high quality filmmaking. All right, final one for you, Deirdre, is, you know, there are a lot of young people who listen to this podcast. And so if they wanted to get into a position like yours one day, what's the path for that? How would one ultimately become like the head of original or unscripted content at a place like Metalark?
Well, I it's tough. I feel like I had a lot of great people helping me along the way, and I honestly think that that's not something, you know. So my first like full-time job was I worked for Connor as his PA, and that Connor Schell. That's not something you can advise someone to do, which is like, hey, go be the PA for someone who's going to have an amazing idea that's going to rocket this place to the, like, that is something that was very fortunate. And we developed a close relationship that helped guide me through a lot of my early career. I think sticking, like, you know, we talked about when I decided it was time to leave and like when I knew OJ would be what it was. I think sticking at ESPN when there were times where I could have left really served me well. Just knowing that the content we were putting out was so unique and so good. And I felt like very privileged to be in that position and just kind of sticking there and continuing to just do the good work was probably the best thing, you know, the best decision I made.
Deirdre Fenton is the executive producer, Unscripted, at Meadowlark Media. She's the executive producer on an upcoming docuseries, which debuts on Amazon Prime Video on November 24th. That is Good Rivals, which is the story of the rivalry between the U.S. men's national team and the Mexican men's soccer national team. Obviously, you'll see both those teams at the World Cup, and this really gives you, or this, I haven't seen it, but I imagine this will, given based on the trail, looks pretty good. It really should give you perspective on just what that rivalry is, and what I like about, at least what I saw on the trailer, is like they're sort of going to tackle the issues that are above soccer, which always, generally speaking, the social, the political, things like that, it's always the more interesting stuff. Deirdre, thank you so much for coming on the Sports Media Podcast today, and not only explaining what you do and what you've done, but just giving my listeners a sense of, you know, what projects sort of are attractive and can ultimately can get to market for them to see. I wish you the best of luck, and thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Deirdre for an interesting conversation. Hopefully you guys appreciated that. If you head to the archives, you will find things, knock on wood, that I think are interesting to you. Podcast before this one, what happens to sports media if Twitter implodes? It was a conversation with Sean Keeley, editorial strategy director at Comeback Media. And we got into a lot of the issues that are facing Twitter in regards to sports media, what an alternative might be, the value of it, how people have monetized it. So if you're on Twitter, that would probably be an interesting conversation for you. For that, Jeff Perlman on his Bo Jackson book. We did a World Cup preview with Grant Wall. Adam Amin and Adnan Burke were on this podcast, as well as Jamel Hill, James, Andrew Miller, and Bob Costas. If you like these kind of podcasts, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how the podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thank you to everybody at Cage 13, Chris Corcoran, etc. But most of all, thank you for listening. And we'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.